we consider ourselves an incubator for transformative justice here in the South. We are committed to really creating a new way of being, of dealing with violence.
That's Rukia Lumumba, a brilliant organizer and movement lawyer who leads the People's Advocacy Institute in Jackson, Mississippi. We'll learn about how they're building power and practicing new ways of preventing and addressing violence in Jackson. But first, we need to go back in time to meet Rukia's parents.
So, Amanda, we didn't set out to do this, but we realized that so many of the folks we talked to this season of Freedom Dreams are the children of movement visionaries.
Yes, we talk about movement work as intergenerational work a lot at the Detroit Justice Center. One of my favorite Detroit movement elders used to ask us, how are you building on the wisdom of three generations back and passing wisdom forward for the next three? We're talking to many people this season who are building on the foundation laid by our elders and ancestors in the long fight for Black liberation. One of my favorite examples of this multi-generational freedom dreaming starts in March 1968 at a conference held at the Central United Christian Church here in Detroit. It was there, in downtown Detroit, where several hundred Black nationalists declared independence from the United States.
They called themselves the Republic of New Africa, and they set out to create an independent Black-majority country spread throughout Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina.
And they started by leasing a piece of farmland just outside of Jackson, Mississippi in 1971.
Over the next 6 months, the group leased the land and began this foundation for one of their buildings. But then last March, a larger contingent of the group turned up, some of them carrying guns. They proclaimed the tract of land the capital of something called the Republic of New Africa. They raised a flag and stated their purpose, to form an independent Black nation in the South.
We came here to help start a new community, one which is often felt would be free of racial violence by the state. Oftentimes, you know, at that time, Black people were still being brutally harassed on a day-to-day basis by all state agents, police, state troopers, but other government agencies as well. And so one is to create a safe place where Black people could exist and live and to be a model of what governing could look like for all people.
This is Rukia talking about her dad, Chokwe Lumumba, who was a member and eventually the vice president of the Republic of New Africa. In August of 1971, police raided the Republic of New Africa in Jackson, and a police officer was killed. 11 RNA members were arrested on charges ranging from sedition to murder.
Though the full dream of a new African republic wasn't realized, people like Chokwe Lumumba never gave up hope. In the 70s, he left Jackson and headed back to Detroit, where he and his wife started their family. They later moved to New York, and they'd eventually settle in Jackson in the late 1980s. That's where Rukia was raised.
And it was her mom, Nubia, she says, who really planted the family firmly in Jackson.
She was the embodiment of the principle that the community is the family and the family is the community, and to work every day to make that concept live. She truly embodied that, and was because of her work in community, in churches, in arts-based groups, in just in our schools, just building, helping us become committed, like ingrained in all of the various avenues of community, from the grassroots to the grass tops. She was the connector. She was that network. And so she created the opportunity for my father to really do the outward-facing political organizing that he was doing that really looked like service work. That's how we came up. Our work was about service.
Improbably, Chokwe Lumumba, Rukia's dad, the former VP of the Republic of New Africa, was elected mayor of Jackson in 2013.
I attribute the victory that we had to the people of Jackson, who were more than ready to have leadership that was forward-looking and ready to raise Jackson to a different level of development, ready to embrace the ideas that all government should do the most to protect the human rights of the people in that jurisdiction.
the Republic of New Africa in the 1970s, was considered a terrorist organization. For him, to maintain his revolutionary beliefs in anti-Black racism and Black liberation, and to still become mayor of the capital of Mississippi. Jackson is the capital of Mississippi. And to win it by over 85% of the vote speaks to who he was, his character, his service, and his true revolutionary love and commitment.
Chokwe Lumumba died less than a year into his mayoral term. The New York Times said in its obituary of Lumumba that being the progressive Black mayor of a Black-majority Southern capital ultimately may not have been a far cry from the Black self-determination he once sought.
Today, Rukia's brother, Chokwe Antar Lumumba, serves as Jackson's mayor.
The room was packed as hundreds of supporters came to watch Chokwe Antar Lumumba take the office as the youngest mayor in Jackson's history.
We could devote a whole multi-part series to the Republic of New Africa and the work of Chokwe Lumumba. Someone should definitely do that. But we start with all that family history to really drive home the notion that so many of our freedom dreams began long before we were born. Rukia Lumumba is continuing her family's legacy and making one of her own. She's the executive director of the People's Advocacy Institute in Jackson and the co-director of the Electoral Justice League of the Movement for Black Lives.
This is Freedom Dreams, the show that knows another world is possible because we're talking to the people building it. I'm Casey Rostro, Communications Director at the Detroit Justice Center.
And I'm Amanda Alexander, Founding Executive Director of DJC. We'll be right back with Rukia Lumumba after a short break.
Hello, I'm Nikita Oliver, and I am the Co-Executive Director of Programs and Strategies at the Detroit Justice Center. It's part of DJC's mission to build more just cities, which means providing services that create more equitable conditions for our clients. DJC collaborates on local, statewide, and national campaigns focused on the needs, wisdom, and vision of our clients and community partners. Within our communities, we participate in people's forums, coalition building, community surveys, policy advocacy, cultural organizing, and direct action to affect change. Together, these actions build the power of residents and communities and help to create a more equitable society for all. If you want to join us in our mission, visit DetroitJustice.org/donate.
So, Rukia, we're curious about how have your perceptions about representative democracy shifted since your family has become enmeshed in it?
Listen, I want true democracy. I love the teachings of Alandra Williams, the late Alandra Williams. It's a brilliant mind who had beautiful solutions that encouraged us to really look across the world at indigenous practices and other ways that people have governed that are truly inclusive. And so having experimented with representative democracy, it just further pushes me towards this belief that what we need has to be a form of true democracy where it is a community-led and community-driven governing process that engages all of us in decision-making. And there are so many examples of that across the world that we can look at and see that shifts the idea away from someone is placed into an elected position to make decisions for you and instead allows those people to actually take decisions from you, right? Like decisions come from you and they're actually just the person to ensure that they're implemented.
As we talked to Rukia, it became clear how her and PAI's more recent efforts in participatory defense, violence interruption, and restorative justice are tied to their long-standing work to build power through people's assemblies. They're thinking in expansive ways about what it means to govern together, what it means to practice democracy and make decisions about the structure of our community together, what it means to create new infrastructure that centers people's needs, whether that's deciding on water infrastructure or creating new restorative justice programs. At the end of the day, it all comes down to power. They've been building the power of people in Jackson to decide on what a safe and thriving community looks like for many years, and it's coming to fruition in some powerful ways.
As the head of an organization, Rikia has her hand in so many different areas. And oftentimes, it's super macro and panoramic. But at the same time, she's deeply embedded in her community in Jackson. Before our interview began, she got a call from a neighbor who urgently needed bail money to get a relative out of jail. PAI runs the state's only bail fund.
So sorry. Oh my goodness, it's always something.
It's okay, Rukia. Can you tell us about the work of the People's Advocacy Institute?
Yes. So the People's Advocacy Institute, we consider ourselves an incubator for transformative justice here in the South. We're rooted here in Jackson, Mississippi, but work across the state. You know, we are committed to really creating a new way of being, of dealing with violence. We really are held in what we consider the traditions of the long and rich history throughout the South of the dialectical models of people, of enslaved Africans that use expressive humanity to cultivate spaces for community members to really build power and to engage in decision making. And so when we talk about, so the People's Advocacy Institute, we help to create, right, spaces for people to realize what we consider their freedom dreams or the programs, the initiatives that will lead to the solutions that we see as common problems. So we have three areas of focus. We have ending mass incarceration. We have investing in community. And then our third area is what we call electoral justice, where we engage in a co-governing process where we focus on use of our people's assemblies as the main decision-making format around policy, around practice, and around initiative development in this city. We also, for our ending mass incarceration, we hold many of the onlys in the state, and we want to see that grow to where it's not the only, because our goal is to always work in coalition. We do not believe that any one organization can solve the problem of the many. And so we currently have what we call the Mississippi Bail Fund Collective, which is made up of several different organizations that come together, including the State Public Defender's Office, that come together to bail out people who are lingering in jails because they can't afford bail across the state of Mississippi. We also have the Mississippi Prison Reform Coalition, which was started as a result of the uprisings by incarcerated people in Mississippi prisons in 2019 and the beginning of 2020. The goal is to shut down Parchment Penitentiary and to impact conditions of confinement inside of Mississippi prisons. We also have a participatory legal defense clinic, which helps to provide freedom for folks who are serving long sentences inside of these prisons. And so we've had some success with that. And then with our investing in communities work, we have the only credible messenger program in the state of Mississippi called Strong Arms of Mississippi, which works as an alternative to detention program for young people that are facing confinement in Hinds County and in Rankin County, Mississippi, to different counties. And then we also have the only cure violence program in the state called Operation Good Cure Violence. And it works as most cure violence programs work, to mediate violence in a particular zone located in Jackson, Mississippi. And then we're building right now a common justice model program similar to our family out in St. Louis and in New York that are doing great work in that area to build a true restorative justice program that will divert folks from the legal system and into alternatives to incarceration, detention, through a restorative process, a restorative justice process. All of this that I talked about comes out of our People's Assembly, which we use as our co-governing process. But through that, we were also recently able to finally, after a four-year battle, get the city to begin to launch an Office of Violence Prevention and Trauma Recovery. And so we're really excited about that and are helping them to build that.
And Rukia, I want to have us dig more deeply into what you're thinking in terms of the restorative justice model and the cure violence work. But before we do that, you said that this has grown out of the People's Assembly. So could you talk more about what is a People's Assembly and how has that given birth to some of this other work?
So a People's Assembly is just as it sounds. It's a time where people come together. They assemble. We gather to discuss priority issues and, most importantly, solutions. We use it as a co-governing process, and we really saw that come to fruition during my father's city council administration, which was the first time that we used it as a governing form for governing, where he would walk into he would host assemblies as the city council person, and he would walk into an assembly. He would share the information, the policy that was up before him or the issue, and he would say, how should I move? How should I vote? And the community would then weigh in and give him perspective on that. He continued that during his mayoral campaign, and to this day, we continue that. The People's Advocacy Institute coordinates the assemblies, but the assemblies were started by the Malcolm X grassroots movement. They are the producers. They are the ones that began this process for us here in Mississippi. It is a tool for self-determination and big decision-making and small decision-making. So whether we're talking about something as small as if you want to have an extra swing in the park, in the local park next to you, or if we're talking about something as big as, let's say, water infrastructure, something we're dealing with right now. What does a remodeled water system look like for Jackson? It's ensuring that community members have full engagement in making those decisions, input, and determining what happens. That we're not just the receivers of policy, but that we're actually co-designers in that policy.
I was wondering if you could speak about a little bit more about the cure violence work around violence interruption and sort of what the theory of change is behind that and the kind of work that team is doing.
Yeah, that's such a good question. So, you know, our cure violence and our work and our credible messenger work came out of a People's Assembly on crime and safety. And we took a year. At the end of 2018, we had the Crime and Safety Assembly. And then in 2019, we did a year of community participatory design to determine what does a violence intervention initiative look like for Jackson. So 125 community members participated for a year-long process to design what we now have in the Strong Arms of Mississippi, which does the mentorship program using the credible messenger model that was designed by Clinton Lacey and others. And then we have the cure violence, Operation Good Cure Violence Program, which, similar to the national organization, works to literally work with folks who are credible messengers, folks who have either been perpetrators of violence themselves and or survivors of violence that live in the community, that have committed themselves to being interrupters, so folks who stand in the gap to prevent additional violence from happening. And so these are community members that, even before a cure violence existed, were already in the community doing that work to some extent, preventing harm from happening. And so through a process of interviewing and negotiating with many different groups, found a group called Operation Good and Safe Streets. So they hold in an area called the Oak Forest community of South Jackson, which is about 45 blocks. They maintain safety in that area by intervening, but not just intervening, by actually being a service to community. So they do canvassing daily, knocking on doors, making sure folks know that they're here, that they're in the community, seeing what people need. They distribute water, food, clothing. They do social support to ensure people have what they need because they understand that. And it is our philosophy that when we're well, violence is decreased because we are in a well place, mentally and physically. And so they work constantly to make sure that people have what they need. They have a summer program that they do in the summer to employ as many young people as possible. Last summer, they had 75 young people, which was far over our budget. We made it happen, you know, to ensure that young people, that folks had things to do, that they were engaged. And so they do a lot of work that is not just about intervening in the traditional ways of stepping in the gap to prevent harm physically with their physical bodies, which, yes, they do. They also do it in ways that prevent that tension from growing in the first place.
Rukia, could you talk about what you think are some of the root causes of violence in Jackson?
There are some things we know, right? Like, I do believe, and we do believe in the data shows us that when people are less stressed, when a gun is not easily available to you, when it's not right there on your hip, that it decreases the number of gun violent incidents that we have happen. So that's one root cause, is that we have poor legislation around gun laws here, right? We are an open carry state, and you do not have to have a license to open carry. As long as you have a gun permit, you can carry openly wherever. And what we see is that as a result, we see neighbors shooting neighbors. We see a lot of accidental shootings. And so gun violence is a real thing here. And nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to go kill somebody, beat somebody. I don't believe that that's what's happening here, right? But it's the easy access to it. It's the easy use of it to resolve conflict or the threat it increases the likelihood that a minor conflict becomes more serious. That's one of the big issues that we have here. You know, another issue is that we are a resource-deprived city. The state has willfully neglected Jackson intentionally. We have not seen our education system fully funded in over a decade. Our water infrastructure system is beyond repair and is in the process of being rebuilt. We were at 221 days of boil water notices last year. This year, we've been without water on so many occasions, weeks and weeks at a time. We just came out of a period of 3 weeks during the holiday break of 50% of our residents' communities not having water, right? And so these are minor stresses that, yes, I do believe heighten people's stress levels. It can cause people to get agitated more, and that can lead to violence. We also are resource deprived in terms of mental wellness supports, in terms of harm reduction supports and addiction support services. So we are really a place that everything that we have, I can tell you that the residents here, community here, has created the possibility for it to exist. We are the most self-determined people, I tell you, that I've seen in a very long time. We do what is necessary for ourselves.
So we'd like to ask our guests this one question, as the podcast is called Freedom Dreams. So the question is, what are your freedom dreams for your work? When you think 50 to 100 years from now, what do you hope is the legacy that your work leaves behind?
My freedom dream is that one day we have truly created a new sense of justice, one that my comrades in New York, Chino Harding and others would say is human justice, one that is based in restoration, is based in love, is based in accountability, but is truly about healing and the wellness of all of our people, and that our systems are rooted in. And I am committed to that. I'm committed to creating space for that dream to become a reality.
Thank you, Rukia. Thank you for that dream and the way that you live out that commitment to making it real every day.
Thanks, y'all.
Freedom Dreams is a production of the Detroit Justice Center. Special thanks to our team, Zach Rosen, our producer.
The Freedom Dreams theme song is by Asante. Artwork is by Gunnar and Hobbs. If you want to learn more about today's episode, head to freedomdreamspodcast.com. You can email us a voice memo of your freedom dream at freedomdreams@detroitjustice.org.
You can also write to us on social media. We're Freedom Dreams Pod on Instagram and Freedom Dream Pod on Twitter.
If you feel compelled to donate to DJC's work, you can find us at detroitjustice.org/donate.
And lastly, if you love this show and want us to find a wider audience, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Yay!